Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
So Jesse Jackson, as you probably heard elsewhere, was caught on an open mic before a Fox News interview criticizing Barack Obama. Now, this might not have become big news today had Jackson not said that he wanted to, quote, cut his nuts out, unquote, referring to Obama, for some things that Obama had said. But the reason Jackson was dreaming of emasculating the Democratic presidential nominee is the real story. And yes, it had everything to do with manhood. Jackson said Obama was, quote, talking down to black people, unquote, when Obama gave a Father's Day speech or sermon at a black church in Chicago, reminding fathers that responsibility doesn't end at conception. Jackson said other social justice issues needed to be raised in a talk like that, such as the number of black men in prison, the unemployment rate, and home foreclosures. So we will talk to two guests and take your calls and web comments. But let's begin with an extended excerpt about a minute and a half of the Obama speech on Father's Day, June 15th, at the Apostolic Church of God in Chicago.
The first lesson I think that all of us have to embrace is the idea of responsibility. That the idea of taking responsibility for your actions and taking responsibility for those that you love. And I know of no better example than this than my father-in-law, Michelle's dad, Frazier Robinson. At the age of 30, was stricken with multiple sclerosis. By the time I met him, by the time I knew him, he had to walk with a couple of walkers, a couple of canes, everywhere he went. And he never went to college because he grew up at a time when there weren't a lot of opportunities. So he worked at a water filtration plant downtown, right by a Navy pier. And he worked there all his life. And he'd have to wake up an hour early because of his disability, an hour earlier than anybody else, just to get to work on time. But he never missed a day's work. He never missed his son's basketball games. He never missed his daughter's recitals. He was always there for them, and he always loved them, and always rooted for them and inspired them. He took responsibility. He could have used his disability as an excuse, just like he could have used racism as an excuse for not caring for his children, but he was there.
Well, Barack Obama, his speech from Father's Day that Jesse Jackson criticized to an open mic, thinking it was private as he was about to talk to Fox News the other day. We'll play another clip in a few minutes, and we have linked to the prepared text of the entire speech if you're interested in seeing it at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Let's talk about the real underlying issue as well as some of the politics now with Ta-Nehisi Coates. He was our Father's Day guest last month, you may remember, on the Friday before Father's Day, for his new book, The Beautiful Struggle, A Father, Two Sons, and an Unlikely Road to Manhood, published by Spiegel and Grau. And also with us is John McWhorter, senior fellow with the Manhattan Institute. His latest book is all about The Beat, Why Hip-Hop Can't Save Black America, published by Gotham Books. Ta-Nehisi and John, welcome back to WNYC. Welcome to both of you. Ta-Nehisi, what did you think when you heard the Obama speech or sermon given 2 days after you were last on our show?
It was so funny. The day that speech was given, I was at this event called Real Men Cook that's been going on for 20 years. Real Men Cook, yeah. And it, you know, seeks to honor and push this idea of black fatherhood in the black community, something that Senator Obama was pushing in his speech. I actually had no problem with the speech. I think to the extent that you know, I did have any sort of objection or that other folks have objections, it's because of this sort of Elvis theory that happens in the media, and that is that if we didn't hear about it, it didn't happen. And so what I mean by that is that these sort of debates about, you know, and these sort of how shall we say, push towards personal responsibility have been going on in the black community for so long. And it's just like when Barack Obama says it, it's as if the Million Man March did not happen, or as if the Million Man March was somehow a, you know, big grab for government programs. These debates are just so old. You can go to any black barbershop, you can go to any black family reunion, and hear, you know, this exact same sort of debate. Ed OG and the Bulldogs had their great hip-hop song, Be a Father to Your Child, almost 20 years ago. So it's not so much that I have a problem with anything Barack Obama said, you know, in that speech. As I talked to you last time when I was talking about my book, you know, obviously I'm big on this idea of black men being more responsible. I think the right. problem comes in when people act like this is the first time it happened, or that it's somehow a rebuke to the black community. When you look, I mean, he was actually making a speech in a black church. The black people were actually cheering for the speech. So I think that's more, you know, what people have an issue with.
And we are opening up our phones. A comments page already open at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show, and you can call 646-778-3729 to talk on the air about this. Black men, did you pay attention to the media coverage that there was at the time about Barack Obama's Father's Day speech, including on this station? What about this Jesse Jackson remark from yesterday? What about the underlying issue here? 646-778-3729, or anyone may call, 646-778-3729. John McWhorter, same question. When you heard that Obama speech, or maybe read the transcript of it the next day after Father's Day, what did you think?
Well, I thought that I enjoyed seeing him channeling into a discussion, which, as Mr. Coates says, is something which is commonplace in the black community. And so the media can jump on it and make it seem like this is the first person who said this, or that it's something renegade. But exactly, you can hear it in the barbershop, you can hear it at any gathering. I would say that probably at least two or three times a week, somewhere around the country, there's some sort of forum in some church or something about the fatherhood. And so I was glad to see that Obama understands that to address that issue is something that you can address while still having a love for the black community. And as far as Jesse Jackson's response, I think what we're seeing there, and I'm not trying to do some tired business of knocking people because they're older than me or because they're from another generation, but I think that we're seeing evidence that there's an old way of looking at things that might be on the ropes, because there is a certain kind of person who hears a speech like that and gets nervous, especially because it gets national coverage and white people can hear it, and just is uncomfortable at hearing the black community told anything except fight the white man. And I think that that's no longer a mainstream view. That's not how we talk among ourselves. And so the Jackson comment, especially because it appears to have been phrased in a certain way, is certainly going to make a kind of news. But I think the black person on the street, Mr. and Mrs. and Ms. Black America, are not usually going to be with that. And so all in all, I think it's just been an event that shows where the black community is today. It's not that Obama is somehow pushing the envelope.
Ta-Nehisi, do you think, though, that Jesse Jackson has a point about the lack of social context? I've looked at the entire transcript of the whole speech, and, you know, there are some passing references, like to the bishop of that church where he spoke, because of his leadership, this congregation has braved the fierce winds and heavy rains of violence and poverty, joblessness and hopelessness. So there's some reference there to social context. Later in the speech, Obama says, we should be making it easier for fathers who make responsible choices and harder for those who avoid them. We should get rid of the financial penalties we imposed on married couples right now and make sure that every dime of child support goes directly to helping children instead of some bureaucrat. So he's got a little bit of policy and social context in there, but overwhelmingly it was a personal responsibility speech. So do you think that given poverty, given imprisonment, given foreclosures, that Jesse Jackson had a point to make about a lack of social context and maybe some pandering that that might have represented on the part of Obama?
Not really. I mean, I think there are a couple things that have to be remembered. First of all, again, he was speaking in a black church to a black audience. And
to the national media as well.
I know. I got that. But I don't think that his audience right there much doubts if and when he becomes president whether he's going to back certain policies, you know, that, I guess, you know, reward responsible fatherhood. It's worth noting that Obama, at the same time that he had made that speech, it also introduced legislation to extend the earned income tax credit to non-custodial fathers. So, I mean, there was also a policy piece to that also. You know, the other thing that also gets, I think, frequently missed is that Barack Obama shares something in common with all too many black men and black women, and that is that he did not really have a father. His black father left him. And I think people often forget how much of an emotional scar that leaves on people. And so there were a lot of people in that audience who were very much, you know, aware of that situation. I think very much felt the same way. I don't think among African Americans, Barack Obama's commitment policy-wise to black folks is much in doubt. So I don't think he had to address it. I guess there's some question about a national audience. But, I mean, speaking from a pure political perspective, you know, I'm not sure how that would help or hurt him. I'm not too clear.
Right. Now, of course, Jackson had previously said something to that effect, that Obama was taking the problems of black people for granted in this race in a much more general way. A few months ago, you had heard that, right?
Yeah. And, you know, and I think that what has to be said, and I guess to this extent, you know, I agree with John, the problems of black people are pretty much the problems of most Americans today. If you stop, you know, I live up here in Harlem, and I think if you stop somebody on Lenox Avenue and said, well, what are you concerned about in this election, I don't think you'd hear much about reparations or affirmative action. I think you'd hear about the economy. I think you'd hear about the war. I think you'd hear about gas prices. I think you'd hear about jobs. So there's just not a huge demand that I've witnessed among African Americans for some sort of, I guess, what we would consider race-specific policies. You know, it's just not, that's not the debate I hear among rank-and-file black people.
Let's take a phone call. Dedrick in Huntington, you're on WNYC. Thanks for calling.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen. Listen, I think that the comments of Jesse Jackson have to be taken into context. I think that one of the, first of all, let me just say this. I do think that Barack Obama does have a right to speak to the issue of fatherhood and the responsibility of black men. Most of us who are African-American men understand that kind of discussion and are not embarrassed by that kind of discussion. I do, however, think that one of the challenges that Barack has at this moment is that he cannot take the African-American community for granted. He is running for the presidency of the United States of America. And when he goes to other communities and into other contexts, he does not denigrate those communities. What he does is he talks about policy, not just policy that is race-specific, but broader policies and broader issues. And so I do think that if Barack is going to win the African-American community, it's okay to talk about fatherhood, but let's talk about broader social policy. Let's talk about urban policy. Let's talk about the war. Let's talk about economic policy, the kinds of things that also affect us. Because every time that there seems to be a discussion with African-Americans, it's always around the issue of some sort of pathology.
And, Dedrick, do you think that he's not doing that on the campaign trail, not necessarily in that one speech very much, but in general, is that because our guests are saying that there's really no doubt where Obama stands with respect to policy toward those things that you mentioned. Do you think that he... is that in doubt as far as you're concerned?
Well, let me say, I do think that he is articulating those things on the campaign trail. I just hope that as he talks to African-American communities, that he also articulates those kinds of things to our community.
Mm-hmm.
He's running for the president of the United States. He's not running to be the best father of the year. He's running to be president of the United States of America. And I think that he owes the African-American community a substantive conversation on those issues when he is present with that community.
Dedrick, thank you very much for your call. John McWhorter, do you want to respond?
Yeah, I want to interject something about the issue of context. We have to remember that our history extends more than 30 or 35 years back. And so to say, and what the implication of the whole contextual argument is, that the reason there is this problem with fatherlessness is because of, you name it, racism, because factory jobs are not as common, or because of the prison system, et cetera. You have to remember, imagine going back into time and talking to a father in 1940, a father kind of like the one that Obama talked about, And ask him whether life wasn't heard. Ask him whether there weren't decidedly some obstacles for black people, including black men. And yet things were different, and that doesn't mean that there's something magically terrible about black men now. There's a whole conversation we can have about why there is this epidemic of fatherlessness. It would take another show. But to say that it's because life is hard and because the system is not as fair for black men as it is for white men or middle-class people just isn't an argument, I think, that can help us. And so we have to always keep that in mind, that there was a time when life was really, if you think about it, harder for all black people than it is now in all ways. And yet, there wasn't an idea that it's a norm for someone to not grow up with a dad. That's what the conversation has to keep in mind.
Ta-Nehisi, how much do you agree?
With what John just said?
Yes.
Pretty much all of it. I mean, I want to emphasize that there are a whole host of reasons, you know, and a whole big debate that we could go into. I'm currently having one on my blog in terms of statistics and, you know, black folks growing up out of black children being born out of wedlock. So I do want to emphasize that point, but I don't think it's enough to simply talk about policy. I think that, you know, and Michael Eric Dyson has been making this point, that it has to be both sides. And I also, you know, want to emphasize, there was a speech, that a very similar sort of speech Obama made on education in a small black church in Texas, in which, you know, the clip of it was this whole sort of social responsibility piece, and everybody, you know, sort of ran to that, and that clip got a lot of play. But what people often miss, he spent the other part of the clip, I saw the complete speech, the other half of the clip, he spent, like, all of this time talking about policy solutions. And the strangest thing was, the audience sat dead, this is at a black church, for all of the policy part. But as soon as he talked about social responsibility, crowd went crazy. It was like he was the preacher in the church. So I think he has been doing a lot of that also.
We'll continue in a minute with our guests. And when we come back, we'll play another clip from Obama's Father's Day speech that Jesse Jackson criticized this week. Stay with us.
Too many fathers are also missing. You and I know this is true everywhere, but nowhere is it more true than in the African American community. We know that more than half of all black children live in single-parent households. Half, a number that's doubled since we were children. We know the statistics that children who grow up without a father are five times more likely to live in poverty and commit crime. They're nine times more likely to drop out of school, 20 times more likely to end up in prison.
Again, Barack Obama from his Father's Day speech at the Apostolic Church of God in Chicago, which Jesse Jackson was referring to in remarks that he thought were private, but there turned out to be an open mic as he was getting ready to go on Fox News the other day, and it started this whole brouhaha, largely because Jackson used a vulgarity in making his criticism. But we're talking about the underlying issue with Ta-Nehisi Coates, who was our Father's Day guest last month for his book, The Beautiful Struggle, A Father, Two Sons, and an Unlikely Road to Manhood, and John McWhorter, senior fellow with the Manhattan Institute, his latest book, All About the Beat, Why Hip-Hop Can't Save Black America. And, you know, Ta-Nehisi, before we take another call, is it entirely an accident that Jackson's vulgarity had to do with wanting to emasculate Barack Obama for talking down to the black community when this whole thing has to do with manhood?
I'm going to be charitable and say yes, because I don't know what his intent was. No, I mean, I guess it's not even being charitable. I really don't know what his intent was. That specific use of a word, I've never heard that before. So, you know, it's not actually a popular thing to say. So, I'm going to say that I think it was, you know, just a mistake that he was just trying to say something to say that he wanted to, I don't know, take him down a notch or whatever. I did, you know, if I could just quickly add in, you know, your caller earlier made a point about Barack Obama, I guess, when he addresses the African-American community frequently giving these rebukes. It's also worth noting that he really did the same thing about a year ago to the automobile industry, where he went into Detroit and basically said, look, you guys really need to work on fuel efficiency standards. I know that's a very wonky thing, but I just don't want this idea that, you know, he only goes in front of African Americans that says quote unquote unpopular things to sort of stand it. That's the only place where that happens.
Ida in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hi, Ida.
Hi. I think that Jackson's a bit jealous. I mean, that must be the reason he could be so. He could say what he said in the way that he said it. Barack was talking to a black audience. Barack was talking in a church. Now, policy statements are fine ordinarily, and he did talk policy in a sense when he's talking. With this last part of the speech that you just played,
mm-hmm.
he was giving them some statistics.
Right.
Because everybody doesn't know those statistics. Even black folks don't know all those statistics.
The rates of poverty, the rates of dropping out, et cetera.
Right. And I just think that it was a ridiculous thing. And he needs to say things like that because it has to do with us. I'm black. It has to do with what we can do, not what somebody else can do. We have something. A man, a woman has something to do with whether we are responsible. Not, we can't maybe keep white folks from putting us in jail. That's them. But this is something for us. And I think that was perfectly valid, especially in the church.
Ida, thank you very much. Michael in Harlem, you're on WNYC. Hi, Michael.
Yes, good morning. What makes what Senator Obama said pandering is the same thing that makes it pandering when it's said by Bill Cosby. Is that what difference would it make if every black father was with the mother of his children and his children, what difference would it make? That poverty rate would still be the same. The jobless rate would still be the same. The lack of education, the lack of health care would still be the same. When you have 50% unemployment for African-American men in New York City, the richest city in the world, how is some man being with some former sex partner going to change any of those statistics? It is not. And it is those social policies which are far more significant in terms of determining the quality of life. These men who are your guests act like there was some magical time in the past when all of these statistics were different for African Americans, and there was not.
Well, John McWhorter, would it change the dropout rate, the poverty rate for children, maybe the imprisonment rate, if a lot of those fathers stay at home? Our caller says no.
I'm afraid that you have to read around a little more widely than that perspective would suggest. I mean, when you read, for example, a common idea, which has been found by quite a few studies at this point, which is that if you get married, if you don't have children until you get married, if you get a high school degree, and if you don't have children until you've got a steady job, that you will almost certainly not be poor and that your children's life will be better. If you read something like that and you just pass by it as if it was just some sort of boilerplate, I'm not sure if you're really taking in all of the facts. And so, yes, I think that there is much proof that if a man were around, it's not like everything would be magic. But things would definitely be better. And as far as there being 50% unemployment among black people of a certain age cohort in New York, we can't look at that and think that the only reason for that must be that somebody doesn't want black people to get jobs or that the jobs don't exist. Because we've got so many organizations that are shunting black men who don't have a high degree of education into jobs that they did not know that they could get in various ways. Again, that's another whole literature. And so I would have to disagree. If there were the men around, it would make a difference. That's why a lot of us are
concerned. Even white New Yorkers don't have jobs. Even white New Yorkers don't have jobs. It's this kind of fantasy that you're talking about is like saying that somehow or another, it's like saying that somehow or another, if people showed responsibility, that all the white people in the country who don't have jobs, who don't have health care, who don't have affordable education would get it magically somehow.
No,
that's just not the reason.
I'm afraid that's really just not correct. What we're talking about is not saying that there are problems that white people have as well. But given that there is disproportionate poverty in the black community, as I think we all agree, there are problems that affect us disproportionately. And certainly if we're concerned about ourselves, then we want to work on those things. And this is the very brief, crucial point. What concerns a lot of us is that if you changed those social factors that you're mentioning, and they are there. We're worried that we're at a point where if those things changed, we might see certain problems keeping on going on their own theme. That's been a problem with employment among young black men without college, for example, since the 1970s, that in many cities it remains constant despite how the market changes. These are real facts, and they create real concern, and we can't just dismiss them as black bashing because they're not comfortable to hear.
Ta-Nehisi and Michael, thank you for your call. Michael mentioned Bill Cosby and that this is as much pandering when Obama does it as when Bill Cosby does it, in his opinion. Is this the Bill Cosby conversation all over again, same thing, or is it somehow different from that?
Well, I should say, first of all, I'm very sympathetic to the point that he made. I mean, I do think that that policy has to play a part in this. I just want to, you know, just eliminate that. I mean, I don't think an either-or debate helps at all. It's very difficult for me to call this pandering, again, when Barack Obama is making, you know, this sort of pitch in front of African Americans, and specific to Bill Cosby, who I just, you know, finished spending about 2 years following around. Bill Cosby often bans the media from these sorts of events or doesn't allow them to record, and they're, you know, virtually always 98% to 99% black, with black people, you know, as I said, you know, very enthusiastic and cheering for the message. So I think that, you know, on the one hand, there is a debate, you know, within the African-American community about, as there has been for almost 100 years now, over 100 years now, about, you know, is it policy, is it self-improvement? So there's definitely a debate there, but it's very difficult for me to call it pandering when it's, you know, being directed with the conversation between African-Americans. It's not like he's out, you know, in Texas in front of a bunch of suburban, you know, white mothers talking about what black people need to do.
Bill Cosby, right.
Bill
and
Cosby,
it was different for Obama because he is obviously talking to the whole country and the national media, which is going to broadcast it to a lot of white people and all
and
of that.
And Brian, I don't want to act like he doesn't get any political benefit. You know, I'm sure that there's some, you know, set of white voters who love hearing that also. But I don't think that's a good reason not to say it.
And you know what's interesting to me, too? I don't know if you heard John Edwards on the show yesterday, either of you, but the former presidential candidate John Edwards was in town at a food pantry in East Harlem to promote his anti-poverty initiative. And so he came in here and I said, well, what is your anti-poverty initiative? And he said, well, we need an earned income tax credit, and we need a living wage law, and we need, and he mentioned other social policy things. And I said, well, what about parenting? What about the single parenting rate, which people say is also associated poverty? He says, yeah, we need to deal with that too. But the white guy came in talking about all these policies. Obama went in talking about all these personal responsibility issues. I don't know if that's a coincidence.
Yeah, well, and people often say this, that Obama gets some permission because he's black, and I guess he does. But it's also worth noting that Mitt Romney, during the Republican primary, during the CNN debate, they asked him about race, and he raised black fatherhood as an issue. And there wasn't a big, oh, how dare Mitt Romney say that. I mean, Mitt Romney is about as white as you can get, I think. So it may just be, you know, different white guy, you know what I mean, who feels comfortable saying white.
He's so white, he named his son Tag.
Exactly. There you go. You said that, not me.
John, how does this speech fit into the evolving picture you have of Barack Obama as a person and a politician? There's been so much talk this week about him moving to the center on this issue and that issue. I mean, this we know is not a move. This we know is Barack Obama for a long, long time. I think it's fair to say. But does it play a role in any evolving picture that you have of Obama as a person or as how he would govern?
Yeah, it does, because what I like about Obama is that while he is a progressive, he understands that the societal context is not everything. And there are a lot of people who will say that employment and degree of racism, et cetera, is not everything. But then everything that they're comfortable saying is all about those things, and they bristle when we talk about what cultural patterns might have entrenched themselves in a community for various reasons and that we have to address. Obama, I think, understands that. He understands that welfare reform in 1996 was a good thing in many ways, which is something that I think a lot of people have trouble quite swallowing. And he understands this fatherhood issue, and so I like this. Now, in contrast to the quote-unquote lurches to the right that he has displayed over the past 10 days, as Bob Herbert put it at the New York Times. I think this is a little bit different in that I don't know if we can call it to the right that he's talking about something which I think most black people agree with. Any black person knows that one of the tragedies in our community is that you see inner city black people behind a baby carriage, and if there's both the man and the woman, it turns your head for a second. It's not the usual sight. Usually it's just the woman, as opposed to among white people on the Upper West Side in this city where it's very common to see both the man and the woman. And that's something that we need to address, and Obama is brave enough to face it. So I like him because he is a progressive person. He does want to help people, but he knows that you can't always pull punches, and that actually in the case of what he's saying now, the punch isn't even a punch. So yes, go Obama as far as this
goes. We're just about out of time, but Ta-Nehisi, someone suggested to me that Jesse Jackson did with this remark, even though it was supposed to be off the record, what in a way Bill Clinton did to Barack Obama in South Carolina, which is to racialize him, to take somebody who's running as an American to be the president of all Americans in the United States and kind of put him in this racial box. Did it strike you that way at all?
Not necessarily, because again, I mean, I guess it is, you know, as you just said, you know, I have trouble seeing a black person going, a white person going to that church the way Obama did and delivering that, you know, same speech. They just don't have the same biography. So, no, I don't know about that. I'm struggling to see what the impact of this remark actually is going to be. It's hard for me to see how, I mean, I know there's been some, you know, minor report that's going to hurt him with black voters, as, you know, I think both me and John have said. It's very hard for me to see that. It definitely doesn't hurt him with white voters.
I would tend to think that this is a net political plus for Obama because his black support is going to remain extremely high and the turnout is going to remain extremely high in black communities. And among white people who didn't pay attention to the Father's Day speech when it was briefly reported on in the national media, it focuses that much more attention on what seems like a centrist or not the kind of black person that white people would fear kind of thing.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And I should just add, you know, despite, you know, popular belief, I just don't think there's a large voting audience in the African-American community that's going to say, yay, less responsibility for black fathers. That's not a huge constituency in among black folks.
All right, we're going to have to leave it there. Ta-Nehisi Coates, journalist and author of The Beautiful Struggle, A Father, Two Sons, and An Unlikely Road to Manhood. John McWhorter, senior fellow with the Manhattan Institute. His latest book, All About the Beat, Why Hip-Hop Can't Save Black America. Thank you both for coming on and talking about this.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. By the way, we've just confirmed Obama's main economic advisor, Austin Goolsbee, to lead off tomorrow's show. So that'll be tomorrow morning. Coming up next hour, we'll talk about Obama, McCain, and Iraq, with the Iraqi government now saying they want a timetable for U.S. troops to leave. But coming up in a minute, we will meet the winner of the WNYC Street Shots Photo Challenge. Stay with us.